You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Inesh Amato. Inesh, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Brainerd. It's a real pleasure to be talking with you. Thank you.
So can you tell me a little bit about, I mean, actually physically where you are right now and also what kind of projects you're working on lately?
Of course. I am in England, and I am actually in a little village called Hockcliffe. Hockcliffe is, in fact, a very interesting spot because it's historically grounded. It is a place where Henry VII used to come and stay when he was visiting his wife just around the corner. So anyway, and it is a Viking place. I do like historical places, but in fact, I didn't choose it. It kind of chose me. Anyway, this is in England. What am I working on? I'm actually working on a project to do with Brad Mathers. I believe you know about Brad Mathers, which is a program of exhibition and debate. It's an intercultural thing and interdisciplinary, and it brings people together, people from different backgrounds, different areas of culture, and not just culture, social areas as well, and political areas. So that is Brad Mathers, and I am working towards the fifth Brad Mathers at the moment.
So can you explain how that whole works? And the fifth one, for I know something about that, of course, but our listeners may not. The fifth one, how do you approach that? And if you can define what it is exactly.
Yeah, well, in fact, I've just come back from Greece, where I was doing some research around issues to do with migrancy, exile, marginalization and integration, and historical as well as actual issues around those, and all interconnected to Brad. So at the moment, I'm actually working on the paperwork because I would like, as I say, the fifth Brad Mathers to happen in Greece, possibly in Portugal and in Germany as well, two poor countries in Europe and a rich one. And it is going to be focused on these issues as well as, all sorts of areas, social political areas. So that's the main thing I'm working on at the moment. So it's more paperwork than anything else. The physical work happens as the project progresses. So Brad Mathers happens, as I say, as a platform of debate and exhibition. I would say, in fact, first of all, exhibition and debate. The two are totally interconnected, and there is always a sub-theme. So Brad Mathers is the main name, and then there is a sub-theme. The sub-theme is always focused on issues to do with the place where it happens. So it's if you like, site-specific, geographical-specific, or historical-specific. But there is, yes, always a specificity in relation to the project. And it brings together many participants, as I said, from various areas. So from, if you like, from the farmer to the baker, to the philosopher, to the politician, to the poet, and of course, with the artist. These people come together, there is an exhibition, and there is a debate.
Let's talk about the debate, like specifically how is the debate moderated, and then if we can talk about it, yeah, what will what will happen visually in the exhibition. But first, yeah, how is the debate?
The debate focuses on particular issues. So, for example, the last one happened in Cyprus, and it focused on the social and political aspect of having that partition, having the buffer zone, dividing a country in two. So it was specifically around those issues and it brought people from both sides. Both sides are, in fact, one country, but they are divided. So that was the main aspect of the thing. It brought in also historical aspects, naturally, but that geography was debated along the social implications. This one in Greece, as I said, will totally focus on the exile. The exile today, the refugee today, but also the refugee of yesterday, because Greece is really this place where the Greek tragedy happens in a kind of continuous manner.
So it will be addressing that, and the site for now that you're going to be working with will be in Greece.
In principle, yes. I have just come back. I did quite a lot of research there. I met many people. I went into various archives. And I went into a refugee camp, which I could not believe how people are living there. Surviving.
Where was that? Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. Where was that?
This was near Volos, which is in the province of Thessaloniki. And
Volos, which is where exactly? Because I don't know where that province is either. I mean, is there a
Volos
geography?
Is,
I'm not so
familiar. Yeah, Volos is a large town. Surrounded by mountains, and it's kind of middle to top west. And anyway, it's a place full of contradictions. It's a place where the other is many times integrated and many times not accepted. And this camp is actually based on an old warehouse of Mercedes-Benz. It's quite ironic, sadly ironic.
Yes.
They don't have any conditions there, but this is not, and they've been there for 3 months now. And they've been in Greece for 5 months. And the problem being that the EU, the European Union, does not want to open any doors for them. So the Greek government, in a way, is as imprisoned as these people are. It was a very moving and very upsetting thing for me, but it was important to kind of witness that, very important.
And so tell us, what did you see, and how did you get into the camps?
For example, I saw a little child who, in fact, came towards us. I was with this art historian who is half Greek and half French, and it was through her insistence. I mean, she kind of insisted with these people, with the guards, that we should go in, that we should be allowed in. And ultimately, after about half an hour, We did go in, but we were not allowed to take photographs. I taped conversations and so on and so forth, but we were not allowed to take photographs. Anyway, this little child, about 2 years old, she was a little toddler. It was actually extremely moving because she came towards us and she was gesturing as if to kind of come in, come in. I mean, she had the gestures, she had the movements of an old Arabic woman, actually, and you know, it was very, very strange. But anyway, obviously I couldn't talk with this child. Ultimately, we went in, we managed to get in, and I spoke with various people, and they are there without any facilities, any amenities, anything really. And
well, where and, are they? Are they in tents? Is this in tents or is it in homes? Or?
They actually are inside this warehouse, and within the warehouse there are tents.
Hmm.
And they you know, there are children, there are babies there, tiny babies. I don't know if any actually was even born actually in Greece, because they've been in Greece for five months and in this camp for 3 months. So anyway, yeah, that's how they are, and it was quite a strong, very moving experience, actually. Yeah.
I imagine it would be. I've never seen anything like that. And then, so what will be the next steps in this? In this process towards the debate and towards the exhibition? We haven't talked about much of what might be in the
right.
exhibition.
Right, so the exhibition will happen, and the works will again have this they will focus on this subtitle, and the subtitle is, as I say, brings in focus these various aspects. So people will have to address those aspects through their work. Artists are free to obviously to express themselves. They are artists, but responding to these aspects.
In a variety of visual media.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So there will be, you know, there can be performance, there can be video work, installation, photography, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
So you've been working as an artist and curator and writer for a while now. Is there something that consistently influences your vision, your outlook? I mean, it's there's a political and social engagement and a research aspect, but I guess I'm asking where your vision and passion comes from in choosing projects.
Well, as I say to my students, nothing comes out of nothing.
That's what I imagine, yeah.
Therefore, this... has happened through a whole process of changing directions, readdressing issues that have been there for a long while but that were not explored when I was a young artist. As a young artist, it was me, and I've closed myself in my studio and close the doors on everything and everybody, and I do my mainly sculpture because I'm, you know, my art is sculpture-based, or it was, and I do my drawings and I do my stuff, and then I'd exhibit. But as time went on, I felt that I needed to bridge out, I needed to reach other people, I needed... to be more open, and so, you know, my work, I could say that for me, it's actually very important to have this to divulge art through exhibiting, and through my teaching and my curating, and to actually reach a strata of public that maybe don't have so much access, and to actually bring them into discuss and understand a bit more about art. So it's that interest. The interest is one that was generated over time and over questioning.
You're talking about the debate also with the different people as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these days my work normally is quite participatory or relational, if you like. You know, I like to involve others. So instead of just positioning myself in this place where, yeah, I'm here, I'm the artist, and you know, I'm doing this and that's it. I like I like collaboration, I like participation, and I feel that for me there is more value in that, and my work then embraces things that I'm interested in. That I'm interested in, and that I feel are of interest to others, and that I, you know, I can open up doors for other people as well.
And maybe let's mention just one story from that, if we can, of these collaborations, of the discussions. Is there one that you remember that you want to just mention to us, a particularly interesting moment in a discussion or a debate where someone's looking at art? Perhaps a little bit differently because of the context they're all in. I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but as you're saying, because
really.
It is relational, it's interesting
absolutely,
what people are also.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I could give you many examples. Actually, I mean, in Portugal, I had old ladies talking to me about their lives, and ultimately. Passing comments about the work I then presented, and engaging in that work, and actually understanding what the work was trying to say. Not just because they were present, but actually they went beyond the fact that they were present, and that happened to me in Portugal, and that happened to me in Ireland. And another example is actually in Ireland with little kids who, when I arrived in this small island called Sherkin Island, 125 inhabitants, and the little kids were saying, "What you're going?" I gave a presentation around the history of bread and so on and so forth, and then I talked to them about this workshop, and they said, "Bread. Oh well, bread. We buy it in a bag. It comes in a plastic bag, and we talked and talked, and I worked with them on and off for a number of months, and at the end they were producing work that was just unbelievable. They were in fact suggesting things to me, saying, "Oh, Inês, how about if we did such and such and such and such? How about if we went out and we did a big installation with bread hanging from a tree?" And things like that. And then I'd say, "And what would you call that?" "Oh, I think that would be an installation," and things like that. So, yes, I do have many examples with people of different ages and different countries actually engaging with art and possibly because bread is so simple but it reaches everyone, really, in one way or another. Absolutely everyone in the world shares bread. It may be made of wheat or of cassava or of beans or even of bones, as it was made in Finland in 1735.
What was it in Finland in 1735?
Bread was made of bones and bark. Because
didn't rise at all, but it was baked somehow?
It was baked, yes, and it was eaten. Yeah. There was a big drought. There was a big problem with grains. They didn't have any, basically, and so they had to actually have that bark, a mixture of bark and bones.
It doesn't sound very tasty. I don't know how they put that together, but
well, it must have been quite horrible. But if you are starving,
right,
you know, and in the 50s, there was a big problem because of the alum that was inserted in bread during the 40s, during the Second World War, and England had enormous problems. Women became infertile.
Mm.
So there's many stories within this simple, on the surface, simple thing, but it's not. It's so complex and rich, really, and profound.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm glad we talked about that, and there's so many more things we can talk about. I wanted to ask you what books you're reading now, if there's a book you wanted to mention before we go.
Actually, I'm rereading something that I like very much. I mean, a writer I do like enormous, Eva Hoffman, and it's time, and it's all sorts of issues around time, including neurological time. So it's a very interesting book, actually. Yeah, that's one of the books I'm reading. I'm reading another one, which I just got, but it's an English author, a young English author, and she just published, and yeah.
Well, Ines, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and your work.
Thank you so much for interviewing me. That's a real pleasure and wonderful. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.